The tank is full, and we're moving through the Arizona Hour with Sanderson Ford and Rosie on the house.
You know, Wickenburg's a hotspot for A-list celebrities.
What?
Kevin Spacey, Tiger Woods, Selena Gomez, Ringo Starr, Michael Douglas, Kate Moss, and Naomi Campbell are just some of the people you could meet if you've got $29,000 a month for your rehab.
That's public information, is it? Okay. I guess that's fair game then.
I was wondering where that was going.
I thought maybe they'd stayed at our partner's ranch or something. No, okay.
I may have was at some point, but they checked into the meadows. Little less known fact that we don't really publicize a whole awful lot. This segment, we cover famous, iconic people, structures, or symbols. And I had to, we'd like it from Arizona, but it was Wickenburg, and that was a tie-in, so okay. It might have been a little bit of a stretch. we had just gotten to the Park of Four Waters, which sounded very interesting, and I want a little more detail on that before we move on with our guests in studio, Steven Schumacher and Robert Malikia, both very active in the preservation of the Phoenix area, but you could take this type of passion and go to any town in Arizona. I mean, what led us to this interview was our coverage of Prescott. There's a lot of great history in Tucson. We were in Tubac this week. You could take this passion for historic restoration to any town. And if we don't do it, I mean, no one else is going to do it for us, and it's all just going to be lost.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Rob and I share a common passion. But yes, pretty much any city, if you research it, whether it be San Francisco or Boston or Philadelphia, more of the eastern cities that have more of a history than us, they still struggle with it. I think most metropolitan cities struggle to some degree because developers are in a hurry. They don't want their money to sit idle. They see an old building as something that's in the way to development and progress, and they're very quick to knock it down with their $80 million and move on. So, it's a challenge for all kinds of cities.
But history sells. It's a money-making proposition more longer-term than short-term. Short-term, it's kind of in the way, just as you said. But if you make the effort, it really does pay off. Every developer that has done that will tell you that it makes money, more money in the long-term than just demolishing it, and incorporate the historic building into your development is the way to go.
And the Park of Four Waters, real quick.
Right. Yeah, the Park of Four Waters is a very historic part of the Pueblo Grande Museum out at about 44th Street in Washington. It's called the Park of Four Waters because it's a location where four prehistoric Hohokam canals all came together. And they give regular tours. You can just go on the Pueblo Grande Museum website. They give monthly, semi-monthly tours with the city archaeologists or the museum curator will tour you around there. But it's fenced off. You can't necessarily go in there on your own. A really fun story about the Park of Four Waters is it used to be more accessible and people would actually go out there. And in the early 1920s, there was a lady named Trinidad Swilling who had been married to the founder of Phoenix, Jack Swilling. And the Daughters of the American Revolution were having a gathering at the Park of Four Waters. And Trinidad Swilling said to the president, a lady who was the president of the Daughters of the American Revolution, she said, "You promised you would put some memorial together for my husband." And unfortunately, Trinidad passed away before the Daughters of American Revolution put a plaque on the fountain in front of the old Maricopa City County Courthouse. And so that, to me, is a really fun story, not only about the Park of Four Waters, but the wife of the founder of Phoenix, and also what the Daughters of the American Revolution did.
And you did mention if you wanted to see that Park of Four Waters, you have to have a guide. So you would go through the Pueblo Grande Museum to get that done.
That's right. That's right. And they have regular tours set up. The reason they have it fenced off and so forth is there's still a lot of Hohokam artifacts and arrowheads and so forth just right above the ground out there. And they don't want people going around just scavenging them and picking them up.
Well, let's talk about going forward. I think that's a big part of the conversation. And you and I had talked a lot about just educating. Mm-hmm. And I think with our transient society, it's harder because people don't have the connection just kind of automatically built in, like this is my hometown. So your idea is to go in and educate early and hope to invest in people who will stay here and invest here.
Right. In my cynical mind at times, I sometimes I think, let's just give up on the adults. Let's focus on the 11, 12, 13-year-old kids and let's educate them right. Let's make them more aware of the different buildings, the history, the culture. Let's teach them to celebrate these things. And then when they get old enough and become decision makers, they'll think twice about knocking down a building. And they'll value and celebrate the history and the culture. A couple of things that we're doing around that, I've connected with the head of curriculum for the Phoenix Union High School Districts to try to get something into the regular curriculum about Phoenix-specific history. A couple other things we're working on is thinking about getting actual barcodes put up on some of our historic buildings so that if people are walking by there, of course, with technology, they can put their smartphone right up there, click that barcode, then look at their phone, and there will be pictures and information about the historic buildings. So that's, and Rob has the idea of creating a marked walking path around downtown, and the combination of the path and the barcodes we think will be a great free educational device for people as they're walking around.
When you're talking to those teachers, you ought to incorporate the Flat Stanley idea. Have you seen him?
I have not.
He's a little flat, like a paper doll. And when kids go away for a vacation or whatever, they take this little doll with them. And then they take a picture of themselves with Flat Stanley wherever. Oh. So our youngest one we did that with. It was fun. So then when they come back to classroom, they'd say, where has Flat Stanley been? So maybe a different little icon, but something where kids, you know, it's a competition or it's a show and tell. Take your Flat Stanley to someplace historic in Phoenix. That would be fun. And get him off the phone. I'm sorry. QR code doesn't jazz me. I'm just one more reason for people to walk around with their head down.
That's a great idea. Any way we can get the younger generation, where it's millennials or even younger kids. I know down in Vail, Arizona, they've done a great job with their historic preservation and involving school children in projects and so forth. So, it's all about getting the younger generations more attuned to what the history is and the heritage of Phoenix. And as they get a little bit older, make sure they're stewards of Phoenix history, just like Rob and I think of ourselves.
Well, let's talk to the olders for a minute. Let's talk to the adults. You know, I love the idea of repurposing, and we talked about some of the venues and things. Talk to a couple of the really cool places to go, and I think just going in those kind of venues kind of inspires people.
Well, thank goodness that's the best way to save a historic building, make it economically viable so the private marketplace does it for you. And we have so many great examples of that in Central Phoenix along 7th Street, Central Avenue, to 7th Avenue. People love history. They love going to historic buildings, and that's really one of the main ways that people that enjoy history can support history and encourage it by going to businesses, restaurants, and other retail shops that are in historic buildings.
That just makes my heart sing when I'm in a place that's old and they've repurposed it for art or eating or whatever. What's the clothing store downtown
Hanny's. Magnificent.
Wonderful.
Restoration of a beautiful old building.
Rob and I were lucky enough about a month ago to have lunch with a guy named Jim Kuykendall, who owns what was Wellnick Marketplace and Leaf Green Seed Company, and right across the street what used to be the Phoenix Motor Company, which is now the Van Buren, which is a very successful entertainment venue.
And Fourth he owns Avenue all and Van Buren.
Right, 4th Avenue and Van Buren. And he owns all three of those buildings and has repurposed all three of them and has just done a magnificent job. And he's a guy that grew up in Phoenix, so we don't have a lot of we don't have to educate people like that. Actually, when we had lunch, he was going through his old family photo album. from his old days in Phoenix. But those kind of people are pretty rare that already have their own passion about saving buildings.
And very valuable.
Jonathan Vento on Roosevelt, who's been a real supporter of historic buildings and made it very, very economically successful. Chucky Duff, who's took many old buildings. So we have a half a dozen great developers in town that support history, and that's our best avenue for saving them in the future.
Well, Romy asked a question that kind of sent y'all into a little something. What are the top five historic buildings? So how do you come up with that? That was a lot harder question than we anticipated. What did y'all come up with?
Yeah, well, I had mentioned to Jennifer when she posed that question, there's all kinds of criteria to determine that. Are they the most, the ones that are nearing demolition? Are they most endangered? Are they most popular? Are they the oldest? Whatever it might be. And Rob and I went back and forth by email about this, and we've come up with five from our standpoint, just our own. The first is the Rawson House. If you've been to the Rawson House, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's over in Heritage Square, right near 7th Street in Monroe, built in 1894. And you can take tours of that. Just a fabulous building. The second one that we came up with is called the Fry Building. It's actually the oldest commercial building in downtown Phoenix. It was built in 1885. It's more known now by Marley's Restaurant is right there. It's at 2nd Street in Washington. The City County Building was built in 1928, I believe.
30.
Was it? Okay,
29,
late 20s.
29.
Yeah. And it's at between 1st Avenue, 2nd Avenue, and Washington. It was at one time both Phoenix City Hall as well as a Maricopa County building.
And that's a great example of government cooperation, where the city and the county came together to benefit both by cooperating to build a magnificent architecture building.
At these buildings, you can go in all these, so you can go in and experience them and feel the culture there. The Lures Building and Tower, 1924, 1928. George Lures is one of the early pioneers who built those buildings, as well as the commercial hotel, which later became the Lures Hotel. And then our State Capitol Building, which was built around 1900. We just took a tour of it a couple weeks ago, and it's just fabulous to sit in some of those decision-making halls.
Now, what about home or structures that we really don't want to preserve? I mean, do we really need that super salad on I-17 at Metro? I mean,
yes. That
how
was
can we repurpose
oh,
that
interesting.
One?
You raised that one, Romy.
That was a very cutting-edge bank development when it came, and it had to be visible from this new highway. So we all notice it. That served its purpose.
It served its purpose.
You know, when I came this morning, one of your gentlemen in your office said, I'm from New York. Why would you want to save Seneca Pre, a 50-year-old building? But that was a connecting, wonderful memories for many, many Phoenicians. Easily could have been incorporated in that development of 24th and Camelback. It would have been something special. Known nationwide. Now it's a nice development where the developer made money.
Same old, same old.
Right. Mm-hmm. I never go there. It looks like a mediocre mid-rise. So there, I think we should. I'm more of a purist. I want to save almost all our historic buildings.
Well, the other thing about that super salad is that it was one of the original Western saving structures that the Driggs family started. And the architect of that building was the same architect for the financial center at Central and Osborne. Some people call it the punch card building. And so from an architect standpoint, as well as a historical standpoint, from one of our mayors and the Driggs family, it's pretty significant. But, yeah, as a super salad, it kind of stands alone.